Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout Podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever, and we talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with Kate, and I'm joined by Mr.
Ben
Errington.
Mr. Ben Errington, that's right, like you're correct, Luke.
Yeah, how's it going, man? You alright?
It's good. Had a devil of a year.
Yeah, pretty good. Got my orange juice.
Yeah, I've just got plain old H2O, you know? Is that orange juice got pulp in it?
Yes. I'm a pulpy man. I enjoy a bit of pulp.
You enjoy a bit of pulp?
Yeah.
I don't really like pulp. I feel like it confuses me what's going on. I'll try to guzzle down a bit of pulp.
Yeah.
And it gets caught, and I'm like, am I eating? Am I drinking? Don't know if I'm coming or going.
Yeah. I like the confusion. I like to bathe in the, what is happening? I like my drink to be quite lynching. Like an episode of Twin Peaks. Okay. Like a new episode of Twin Peaks. What?
Oh.
What?
Wow. I don't know where that came from. I mean, that's not current or relevant at all, is it? Jesus.
So we normally do, we're doing the rundown of the Empire's 50 top horror movies ever, but occasionally we like to do other things. Today we're doing an honorable mention. We are doing Get Out, which came out like 2 months ago, we think. Do you want to tell us a bit about it, Ben?
Yeah, okay. So Get Out is a 2017 American horror film written, co-produced, and directed by Jordan Peele. In his directorial debut, the film stars Daniel Kaluuya, Allison Williams, Lil Ray Howery, Bradley Whitford, Stephen Root, and Catherine Keener, and follows a young interracial couple who visit the mysterious estate of the woman's parents.
Nice.
Mysterious estate.
So we haven't got any sort of media students critique, but on Rotten Tomatoes, it does say, funny, scary, and thought-provoking, Get Out seamlessly weaves its trenchant social critiques into a brilliantly effective and entertaining horror comedy thrill ride. It's got 99% fresh. Very, very good. 7.9 out of 10 on IMDb. On the Facebook group, in the Horror Hangout group, Michael Mayunda says he loves Get Out. The performances are great and it blends comedy and drama in the film at appropriate times really well. Tommy Draper said he loved it. Great story, lots of creepy builds. Can't wait to see it again. And he's also linked us up to like an interesting article about the symbolism in the film, which we'll talk a little bit about because there's some interesting bits there. So what do you think? So 2 months ago, when did you see it?
I saw it a little while ago. I saw it in theaters when it was released, and I was looking forward to it. I mean, I'd only seen like a trailer,
yeah.
And I think even then you're kind of a bit like you don't get the whole picture at all. So it's a bit like, what the hell is this? I mean, it just seemed really, really strange. The trailer was like really jarring and loud and a bit not like the standard horror film. I mean, there were standard horror film trailer bits in it, but most of it was a bit like just seemed like a weird.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell what the film sort of was trying to be, whether it was trying to be a horror film or sort of like a thriller or what. But yeah, I went to see it, and I was massively into it. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah,
for a directorial debut, I mean, it's just one of those films that just has a lovely flavor running through it. And
yeah,
It's very unique. It's very unique. It's very like unnerving. It's like it's hard to like. It doesn't quite settle down into something. Mm. It just keeps throwing these weird sort of like curveballs at you. And I find it really entertaining. And I think even though it wasn't the most satisfying sort of conclusion,
yeah.
Eventually, considering I had quite a lot of hype around it, and I'd read everywhere that it was like the highest rated directorial debut, I think, on Rotten Tomatoes or something like that. But yeah, I thought it was great. I loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet.
I saw the trailer whenever that first aired, and I was immediate because I love Daniel Kaluuya ever since that episode of Black Mirror, 5 million yeah. credits. I was like, completely, it piqued my interest straight away, that trailer, because it's kind of a mental trailer. I think you're right. I think the film, although the film itself is not a perfect film, it was incredibly refreshing. And I don't know why. I think it's maybe just Jordan Peele's like point of view, or there's something very, very unique about it. Like, I've never seen another horror movie like that, or not quite as.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a very interesting point of view
yeah.
for a film to come from, I think. And it is quite a unique sort of thing. And I think like the social commentary and like the politics that run through it just kind of like add to
yeah.
to the whole vibe of the film, which is one of uncertainty. I think about everything, about what the hell's going to happen. You know, it reminded me in a lot of ways of like sort of like a X-Files episode or something, where the setup is quite standard, but the payoff eventually is something quite unique and quite quirky.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so like I said, the key players in the film. So you got Daniel Kaluuya playing like a photographer called Chris Washington, Alison Williams playing someone called Rose Armitage, that's the girlfriend. Catherine Keane is in it, she's really good, as the mother, Missy Armitage. Bradley Whitford as Dean Armitage. And then you got this guy called Little Ray Howard, who I've never seen before, who plays his friend, Rod Williams, who's amazing throughout the film. It's like.
Yeah, because it's even though it's like his scenes are hilarious,
yeah,
it doesn't feel out of place at all. It's kind of it's kind of that breather you need sometimes. And obviously, while comedic elements in horror films sometimes fall a little bit flat or fall a little bit short, this kind of felt right. And every time he was on screen, because he was given quite a lot to do, despite the fact it wasn't just like he was calling him up and telling him about this, and he was like quipping and sort of saying "what" and all this stuff. He was given quite a lot to do. He was quite integral to the plot,
yeah,
which I think was good, because every time he went back to him, it wasn't like, oh, he's going to say something funny again, it's going to be awesome. You kind of like, he was trying to, he was pushing the plot along. He's trying to help the protagonist, which was good. I think it was good for the film.
Yeah, yeah. So he was the comic relief, but it didn't feel silly or cheap. It felt very sort of right for the film.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He wasn't like a caricature of that sort of character who might appear.
Says a catchphrase or like. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Just like the best friend of the protagonist who like appears every now and again.
You don't want now. Like, this, like some like thing that everyone's quoting as they leave. I like that bit in the film where a guy goes, "You don't what now?" Like,
yeah, exactly. A little bit, exactly. But every time he had something to say, it was good. And I think there was a particular scene of his, which I find pretty hilarious. I guess we'll get to that.
Yeah. So the story. So we start off with a really nice single take where it's a guy called Andre Hayworth. He's walking down the street, and then a car pulls up, playing the Run. Is it Run Rabbit Run? Is that like the?
Yeah, yeah. Run Rabbit Rabbit. Yeah, that one.
Okay. and then he gets sort of kidnapped. So immediately you're kind of thinking.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So he's in like a neighborhood that he's like, isn't he going to like meet somebody or something, or he's trying to find somewhere?
Well, I think later in the film you kind of realize he has been dating. I don't want to spoil it yet, but has been dating someone in that neighborhood.
Oh, that's right. And he's trying to find them. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So obviously, do we see the kidnapper at this point?
No, he's like wearing like a weird like metal gimp mask, isn't he?
Yeah, he's wearing almost like a suit of armor, but like a sexy one.
Oh yeah, it was quite sexy.
Oh, that is a sexy suit of armor you've got there. It's like one that sort of accentuates his curves. I mean, it's protecting him, but you know, it looks good
at the same time. Yeah,
it looks great at the same time. Exactly.
Cool. And then so then we sort of introduced to our main characters. Daniel Kaluuya, Chris, and his girlfriend, they're on their way to meet her parents. We get sort of the idea that he's a little bit awkward about it. because they don't know he's black. He says it'll be fine. It all seems kind of normal at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it seems normal. He sort of says, do they know I'm black? And she's like, no, well, that's fine. He's like, what did you say? You know, it's one of those. So yeah. It seems like, you know, they seem to have like quite a good relationship. They seem pretty close at this point. And bless him, he's a little bit worried about meeting the parents, as you would be. But, you know, at this point, she seems pretty normal. She seems lovely.
Yeah, yeah. I completely relate. You know, Kat didn't tell her parents that I was bold when we went to... I mean, do they know I'm bold?
It's definitely the same.
It's exactly the same thing, yeah. They hit a deer on the way. So they're driving, they hit a deer. I was trying to see like what the relevance of this was after the film, because there's some deery bits throughout it, but I didn't really see what the whole metaphorical resonance was if it was. So they hit a deer, and it's like crying, and Daniel Kaluuya's like looking at it, dying. And I think I realize now it's something to do with his mother. So he's like,
yeah,
he's just watching it die. I think he's sort of unsure if he can help it or what he can do. At one point, I thought he was going to kill it. Have you ever seen The Invitation? Yeah. There's a very similar thing in that where they hit a deer and then he has to take a hammer and he has to go like kill it.
Right, okay. I don't know if he could have done that. But yeah, that was quite good. I also like the sort of opening credits at this point. There was a good sort of like main theme in the soundtrack and the way the sort of logo appeared over some like trees that were all like whizzing by. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Carried away then. Yeah, I thought that was good. I thought it was awesome. As I know, obviously you mentioned Black Mirror already because of the fact that Daniel Kaluuya is in the credits one. Which one is he in? The
15 million credits.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of got the vibe of it already.
Yeah. Is that just because it's Daniel Kaluuya, or is that just because it was like a modern horror film without any supernatural?
I'm pretty sure you can see Jordan Peele doing a Black Mirror episode. I'm going to call it. Yeah. He's going to do one in a new series. This is a prediction. Yeah. Because I think obviously the Black Mirror vibe is, here's something totally normal. Here's a totally normal scenario. Here's a totally normal thing. But oh my God, this crazy thing is happening in the world.
There's nothing supernatural. It's like a... It's always like a real potential thing.
Yeah, it's always like a real potential harrowing thing that could happen. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And also, this was a good time to set up the whole the thing that was trying to look at the perception of Daniel Kaluuya's, so Chris's character as a black man being in a relationship with a white woman, and then we see how the police treat him at this point. And obviously, it was just a little bit of an inconvenience for him, but obviously. Rose was more defensive of him than he was of himself.
Yeah.
Potentially because, you know, he's lived with it for a while, but he was sort of, even though Rose was driving, the police officer was still saying, can I see your license to Chris? And obviously Rose was like, why? Why do you need to see his license? He wasn't driving. I just want to see his license, you know? So already that sort of like sets the sort of tone, gets under the skin for the...
He was already in the sunken place. You know what I mean? Like, because he was already... not willing. He just sort of was willing to give the license over already without any sort of fight or anything. He was just, that's just the way it is for us black people. Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really interesting. And then they get to the house. It's like a really, not a stately home, but whatever the American version of that is, like the middle class.
Yeah.
Very just nice, wealthy house.
Suburban. Yeah. Lovely suburban Stepford Wives type of lovely neighborhood with a massive house. And then
Stepford Wives, I would say that's a massive, like, aesthetic sort of theme throughout this film, actually.
But
so the family seem okay. I mean, they seem a little bit uncomfortable. Like the dad is like saying like all this kind of, I think he's talking about basketball and rap music or something.
Yeah, and Obama being his favorite president.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that a couple of times.
Almost like that, you know, he's trying a bit too hard to sort of get on a level with him.
Yeah,
in terms of like culture and in terms of everything else. But you know, I think. You kind of just go along with it. You're kind of like, yeah, there are a lot of people like that.
He seems like a harmless person who means well. Like, he doesn't seem like he wants to do anything untoward. And then the mum, Catherine Keener, again,
she seems a little bit more normal.
More normal, yeah. I think we find out there and then that she does hypnotherapy, but they don't really make a big deal about it. They just say it's,
yeah.
Oh yeah, so he says the dad says she helps me quit smoking, And then she says, I could do it for you as well if you want. And he says, no.
And he's like,
nah.
But he's a little bit unsure of it. Isn't he? And then also, obviously, we see the hired help. So this is obviously the first sign of it being a little bit strange, is the fact that, that obviously they've got a gardener and a maid, both black.
Yeah.
And obviously Chris is a little bit, you know, these are the only black people we've seen in the neighborhood. I know he's only been there. He hasn't been there very long. But they're the only black people we've seen in the neighborhood. And so he's a little bit like, oh, right. Okay. He kind of gets it. But then obviously they're a little bit odd themselves. They sort of act a little bit very, very like prim and proper and almost like very,
they talk like 1950s greasers, or not greasers, but they say like I'm just picturing people getting like a shake. Do you know what I mean? And like shaking fries and then sitting on the bonnet of their car. Saying like, I need to find quotes or something.
So what they have to say. Like, the way they sort of acted, the way that they were sort of like, they almost seemed quite suspicious of Chris at this point. I kind of got the vibe now. I felt, obviously, we do get this sort of put out into the open by Chris's friend. So little what's his name again?
Little Ray.
His name's Rod. His name's Rodney in the thing, isn't it? So
yeah,
he does put this out there. But at this point in the film, I thought, okay, so she can do hypnotism.
Yeah.
These guys seem very prim and proper and talking all. You know,
they've been conditioned or something.
They have been conditioned, or they're being hypnotized, and they're being kept there. You know, kept there prisoner or forced into whatever. That was kind of what I got. But I guess that was what the film was trying to do. It was trying to nudge you towards this way, because it seemed a bit obvious for it to be like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes in
to know exactly what was going to go.
Already kind of like know what was going to happen. But I guess that was the setup. We were set right up there, Luke. Set right up.
The only really odd white person I thought was the son who joined them for dinner, and he started to like want to have a bit of a scrap with him.
Yeah, like he had a couple of beers, didn't he? And he was a bit like,
yeah.
Do you want to have a little dust up, mate?
And then he started like sort of saying, you in your body frame would be perfect for like cage fighting. Yeah. Or like it's kind of racist, but like positive racism, I guess. Like you're the... Your build is perfect for fighting. Like, I don't know, it was kind of...
There was a lot of that, wasn't there, in this film?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, for good reason, but a lot of the sort of white characters were deemed to be sort of like almost in awe.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly in some way. Yeah.
In terms of him, in terms of his physical attributes.
Yeah.
They seemed... But, yeah, that was obviously a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so then... Where do we go from there? So is that the night when he goes down to have a cigarette in the middle of the night?
Yeah. So he goes out to have an old cigarolo, fagaroon, down outside. And so immediately he starts talking to the mother, Missy, I think her name is.
No, but isn't there a scene there where he's smoking? This might be later on. And then
this is now.
Okay, so smoking. And then the guy... The groundskeeper, I don't know his name, just runs straight for him and sort of turns at the last minute.
Yeah.
We saw
a bit of that in the trailer, but this was strange, wasn't it? Because you don't really understand why at this point. Or ever, I guess.
Yeah, no, you do. I only realised this because I think I read a review and someone pointed it out. Like, I think I saw Chris Stuckman's review and he said that bit doesn't make sense, but it does. Because when I first watched it, I thought it was like, the guy inside, the preconditioned guy trying to break out of his conditioning and was just trying to escape, but like he was just sort of trapped in it or something. But what you actually find out later on is that their granddad was a runner. Like he was like an Olympic runner or something. He came second to a black person.
All right.
And so I think he was just doing his laps sort of around the field, around the grounds.
Yeah, but it was a bit unnerving, a bit jarring.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because he ran straight at him and then turned at the last minute. I mean, Chris didn't seem... I mean, he was freaked out by it, but he didn't seem terrified.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that was a bit weird. You think you'd say that to somebody, go, your mate boy was just running around outside like a crazy person.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, then he has a conversation with the mother, so Missy. And she kind of like gets under his skin. He doesn't seem like he really wants to talk to her that much. He definitely doesn't want to open up as much as he does, and he does open up to her about how his mother died where when he was younger, she was killed in a hit and run accident, and he was at home, and he could have called somebody because she was super super late, but he didn't, and he just let the sort of night drift by, and then obviously he kind of blames himself because he thinks if he would have called somebody immediately when she didn't turn up, maybe she could have been saved.
Yeah, but, yeah.
So he's kind of got that conflict going on.
What do you think to Daniel Kaluuya's sort of performance, or Chris as a character?
What, up to this point?
Yeah.
I thought he was good up to this point. He's got a very expressive face, in particular his eyes. Like, he doesn't have to do much to show that he's like, what?
Struggling. Yeah. So, like, he's a really reserved. I think even in the Black Mirror episode, he's kind of a reserved character, but like the expressions sort of come out of his eyes.
It feels really real, because it's like, if someone's like put in an awkward situation like that, we didn't really know what to say or do. You know, there's a certain facial expression that he does a lot where you kind of go, yeah, that's probably that. I'd probably do that all the time, where he's a bit like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have to say much or do much to show exactly what his character is feeling in that particular time.
Yeah.
I think that's quite impressive.
So she hypnotizes him like sort of against his will. So she's like got the silver spoon, and she's like stirring the sugar into her tea, and then she starts talking to him, and he sort of falls into the sunken place, which I thought was a really cool effect. Especially like, you know, the way the voice sort of lowers pitch as he falls into it. It was really good. How did that go down in the cinema when you watched it?
Yeah, I guess like at the time I was a bit like confused as to what was going on. Was this like a physical thing? Because obviously it's not a physical thing. It's just somewhere that he's sort of going in his mind. But the way they sort of showed it was he'd fallen pretty much down into some darkness, and then Missy was, while she was still hypnotizing him, was still sort of like up in this, you could sort of see a little portal
in her head.
And he was kind of like falling like that. I mean, that was cool. So he was sat there, and he couldn't do anything. That's when we see the sort of, I think this is pretty iconic. I think this is going to be something that's iconic, which is him sort of staring, mouth open, and a singular tear.
The singular tear up at the something like a TV display.
I think that's going to be pretty iconic for years to come, that sort of visual of him. Because when I saw that in the trailer, I was like, what is he looking at? That's all I thought. But what is he seeing there that's making him sort of go into a sort of terrified trance? So she does kind of take advantage of him and hypnotize him, but this is where we start to think, right, she's getting her claws in, she's going to hypnotize him, he's going to end up doing something else around the house.
You mean like he suddenly wakes up and it's the next day, and you kind of wonder what the hell she made him do in the nighttime. I think he says it worked. Like, he doesn't want to smoke.
No, he doesn't. That's good.
Yeah,
I thought at this point we were gonna get like either they were gonna be like ultra conservative, borderline extremists, maybe like some sort of, you know, like the KKK or something, some sort of representatives of that, and that they were sort of like living in this sort of suburb, and they were still living with sort of like the same from hundreds of years ago, the same sort of logic, I guess. And again, that was the thing. It kind of kept fleshing out this idea for me that I felt like I was getting to understand what this film was about. And I wasn't.
Yeah.
I kind of was, but I pretty much wasn't.
Yeah.
So I thought that was quite good.
It maintains that mystery pretty well throughout. So the next day, he's starting to feel a little bit freaked out of him, but I think he's sort of still okay with it to a degree.
Yeah.
His phone's been taken off charge again. From the side of his bed, and then this is the bit where all the guests arrive in the house, like a big guest party sort of thing, which is always awkward whenever you get someone else's, like a girlfriend or partners, and then like that's a big family party or something.
He was like getting introduced to absolutely everybody, and you know, most of them seemed nice. Occasionally one of them would say something that was a bit like something he's probably thinking, I get this all the time, but they do take a sort of a little bit of a strange interest in him again.
Yeah, you just see them sort of looking over at him from their conversations. Like, he's almost like a special guest. He doesn't even know he's a special guest. Like, they're planning a surprise party. Just give it 5 more minutes and we're gonna
So this was come on, we're gonna do the surprise. Yeah. Gotta do the surprise.
Party
yeah, obviously he... right in his ear. Bang! Yeah.
Sunken place.
Straight down into sunken place.
Yeah. And then He meets Logan King, I think his name is.
Yeah.
Who's the full-on whitest, like, black person you'd ever meet.
He is the whitest black guy you could ever meet. He's more of a white black person than Carlton from Fresh Prince.
Although that's a good sort of simile of a person. He has got a bit of a Carlton. He's Carlton, but not funny. Like, it's creepy. Creepy Carlton.
Yeah. And obviously, initially, Chris kind of thinks, I recognize this guy. I've seen this guy somewhere before. But obviously, has a little bit of a chat to him and sort of says, hey, man, good to see another brother around here. And it's just like he's not kind of too happy to see him or not too happy to sort of talk to him. I mean, he's nice and friendly and all that, but he seems to have a much older woman with him
as
well.
Yeah, he's with a really old woman, yeah.
You can't really tell at this point whether there's something going on there or maybe, you know, it's just a bit strange.
And I think Chris calls Rod, his mate, and I think he's saying they hypnotized him or something, or they changed him. Like, he's putting together, he's like us at this moment, he's putting together the same pieces of the puzzle, coming to the same conclusions. So I think he maybe asked for a photo, or Chris decides he's going to take a photo anyway.
Yeah, well, he comes to the conclusion at this point, as Rod does on the phone. He says, like, everything you're telling me about them acting weird, and the only other black guy in the whole sort of, like, suburb seems to be almost like he's trapped there. Black sex slaves. That's immediately what he says.
Yeah.
He says, these white folk are kidnapping black people and making them sex slaves. That's it. And he's got it. And I was like, that's probably what's happening there.
Sounds
about
right.
I can't feel like there's any other. So far, what Jordan Peele has given us are all the pieces to this puzzle. And Rod's put it together for us. And we're like, that's it. Like, that's the ultimate, you know.
That's the mystery. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's inside the box.
So obviously he's like, take a photo of Logan. Because if you say you know him, you know, maybe I know him as well.
Yeah.
So he does the classic, take a sneaky photo of someone, but leave the flash on. That is, you know, he should have known what he was doing there.
And then Logan skitzes out. I think his nose maybe bleeds or something. And he starts walking towards Chris. And he's just saying, get out over and over again. And then I think they pass it off as some sort of epileptic fit or something. Yeah.
And he sort of goes off, and Missy kind of, you assume she like hypnotizes him again or does something else to him.
Yeah, brings him back to.
Comes out all apologetic and sort of like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
But at this point, Rod, I think he gets the picture and he says, that's Andre, someone or other. He knows that guy. That's the guy from the start of the film, I think, who gets kidnapped.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't necessarily, I recognized him, but because he's dressed so differently.
He doesn't have a beard as well at the start. So he kind of, like, if you shave one of us, we wouldn't know who the fuck we were talking to.
Who's this little child while doing the podcast? Could I do a podcast, please? Could I look a good horror film? So
at this point, Chris is like, I'm getting out of here. He convinces Rose, his girlfriend, to leave with him. And then she... I didn't expect her to say okay. I was kind of expecting her to convince him to stay or do the whole girlfriend thing of saying it's all in your head. Like, but she didn't, which was quite interesting.
Yeah. So it's when they're packing to leave that that Chris sends the picture to Rod, and then he says that Logan is Andre Hayworth, a mutual acquaintance of theirs who just like vanished. Didn't he send him like a picture of like a news story or something he's found online?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, yeah. And this is when Chris finds some photos.
Yeah, so he finds some photos of Rose with about 20 different black people. Like, yeah, exactly. Different ex-boyfriends.
Not at the same time.
Yeah.
Not at the same time.
Yeah.
So different ex-boyfriends, people who probably would fit the sort of frame, the sort of probably like the same age, build of Chris. You know, they're all handsome fellas. And it seems like she's been racking them right up, hasn't she?
Yeah.
She's been racking them right up, 20 plus of them. But yeah, that's when you realise, what the fuck is going on here?
So he tries to leave. The door's locked. The brother is like trying to get all physical again. Rose has got the keys in the bag. She can't find them.
She's taking too long to find the keys. You know, find the fucking keys. Where are the fucking keys, Rose? I thought this was a great scene.
Yeah, it really was.
This was like a real tense scene where you kind of like knew something was going to go down.
Yeah, yeah.
But you weren't quite sure of what everyone's goal was who was there. Like, obviously, Chris wants to leave. You kind of at this point think Rose is a bit unsure, but she's probably going to leave as well. And that the family are just like, come on, just stay with us. Maybe you want to get hypnotized again.
Yeah.
No. But then it turns out Rose is in on the act. Well, obviously that was confirmed with her having all the boyfriends, but
to
see her make that change on screen from I've got to find the keys to be like, I'm not gonna find the keys, mate. Come on.
Yeah.
You know what's going on here.
Yeah.
It made me wonder whether every single time this went down like this, whether she had to like maintain it for as long as possible and then eventually sort of turn around or whatever.
Judging by like the way she acts in the rest of the film, I kind of feel like it's all part of the game for her. She's kind of, I think she enjoys all of this as sort of one big game generally. So I think, yeah, I think she probably would try to trick them for as long as possible.
Yeah.
But then this is when, so I think he tries to escape and then she like dings the cup or
yeah. Something. So I mean, so she's pretty much got him now. So because she hypnotized him once, she can easily send him back to the sunken place immediately. Just by tapping her spoon on the side of that teacup,
yeah.
Which is pretty horrible to have someone to have that power over you.
Yeah.
Are you going to do the washing up today, Luke? No, I can't be bothered. No, I've had a long day.
Sunken place.
Sunken place. And then you wake up and your hands are all...
Oh, wait, no, would you do it to yourself? Like, would you... I would love to do the washing up, but...
Oh, yeah, I'll do that right away. Ding! Oh, bloody sunken place again!
Yeah, I can't risk touching mugs against silverware, you know, I'll just end up back in that horrible place.
Maybe the sunken place is like in a washing up bowl.
Yeah.
It's like right at the bottom of it, underneath the greasy water.
Yeah. So it's like a nice little side scene here where Rod goes to the police. This is like funny sort of scene.
This is the scene I was talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
This was funny. I enjoyed this. Because he is 100%, he believes exactly what is happening.
The sex slave
everything
theory.
Chris has told him, the sex slaves theory, that Andre's gone missing, now Chris is about to go missing, white people in a bloody suburb are kidnapping black people and keeping them as sex slaves. So he goes to the police with the utmost urgency and seriousness and tells like a police detective this, and immediately she's like, what? Yeah, well, let me just get my colleagues in. And she gets her colleagues in just to laugh at him.
I feel a bit bad for him, like,
yeah.
I mean, obviously we know he's sort of telling a half truth, but I don't know. It was a good scene, but if I was a police person, I would have at least looked into that, the missing people.
I
wouldn't have I wouldn't have just popped him off like that easily.
Yeah, but that was when he knew police aren't going to help me. I'm going to take matters into my own hands.
Yeah,
and that's fine.
He's like a security guard or something, right? TSA.
Yeah, so I think he's like TSA, so the like security guard dude. So you know, but he knows his shit. We can tell at this point. I mean, he might be a funny guy and he might have all the quips in the world, but he knows his shit.
Yeah.
And he's the kind of guy to get a job done.
Yeah.
He's not going to let Chris be kidnapped and become a sex slave like this.
No.
No, not on his watch.
Yeah, so not I think he does some sunshine. He does some detective work, doesn't he? I think he tries to call Rose, and then
he tries to see through her.
Yeah,
blind bitch.
Yeah, he puts her on mute and starts calling her like
blind bitch. Yeah. Yeah, so he talks to her, sort of asks what's going on, and she's sort of like just saying sort of standard stuff. And what did she say, Chris is? I'm not sure. But anyway,
yeah,
he sees straight through it. And to be honest, it's good for him to see straight through it because she's pretty convincing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When she turns it on,
she's a real actress.
She's a real good actress.
She's been in films or something. Yeah. So this is like the big reveal now of like what is actually happening. I can't remember what to call it. So basically, Chris wakes up and he's like strapped into, I think he's in the basement somewhere. It looks like a 1950s house. He's strapped into this thing, the chair. There's a video of a VHS playing. They call it the moth method or something, the butterfly method or something.
I can't quite remember that.
Yeah. So the idea is that the daughter goes out, she finds specimens,
lovely specimen.
The mum hypnotizes the specimens and gets them ready to sort of go into the sunken place. And then they do some sort of, they auction off the black person, and then they do some sort of brain transplant or something. So the old white person is in charge of the black person's body.
Yeah, so it's not like a full brain transplant. It's just a part of the brain.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, so the white person is in control. So obviously, whoever the black person is still there.
In the sunken place.
Yeah. In the sunken place, but they're not in control of their body. Their body is being controlled by these white people who are like a bit older. So it's almost like it's their sort of immortality as such. Yeah.
So do you think they go from person to person?
Yeah, probably. I mean, if they perfected this method, it seems to be working.
There's only one generation. Well, I guess there would be only. It's like a 1950s technique, isn't it? And there's only the grandparents that have done it. So maybe they go from person to person after that. I don't know.
Yeah, but at this point, because obviously she's had so many boyfriends, because you've seen all the photos, did you not think, where are the rest of them?
Well, I guess they've been auctioned off to other people.
Yeah. Because I just assumed that they would all be living in the same environment.
I guess
maybe not. Maybe they've all gone elsewhere.
Also, I would say, like, when the person, say you're the white person, you get put into some black person's body, you don't look like you're completely in control. There's like a bit of a delay, sort of thing.
Yeah.
You're never going to be normal again. Like, no one's ever going to get convinced that, like, you're a normal person. People think you've got like some mental issues.
You're a little bit slow or a little bit unsure all the time, where like everything's a bit like, oh god, it's almost like they're battling within.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, obviously whoever's the white person is in control mostly, but it's almost like whoever's body it is still kind of there trying to claw back control. It was weird because I didn't really expect it to go this way. This was like a bit of a, for a few minutes I was a bit like, what's going on? What the hell? So obviously we understand that Chris is pretty much next as a host, and he's going to be used by there's a man he meets earlier at sort of dinner party, like a blind guy.
Yeah, a blind guy who likes photography. So
he
wants Chris's eyes. Basically,
just one eye. He wants just his sight.
The one.
Yeah,
yeah. But it's really good. I think. It's very rare to see a film like this where you kind of feel like he's not going to get out of this. Like, I couldn't see how, because he had such a power over him with the hypnotist, like the sort of just a tap of the glass and he was gone. They had like all the physical, the son who's like a physical sort of wrestling sort of guy. I just couldn't see how he's going to get out.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I couldn't see how he's going to get out. You know what I'm saying? How was he going to get out? But yeah, that's good. When you put your protagonist in this sort of situation where you think it's utterly, utterly hopeless, that is when things take a lovely twist. Is when
you have to get creative. Like,
you have to get
MacGyver.
Very creative.
Yeah.
You have to get MacGyver.
So the way he does it, as he's in the, they're sort of prepping to do the brain transplant in one room, he finds like a bit of loose cotton and he shoves it in his ears to stop himself from hearing the thing that puts him
in. It's like the stuffing in the chair, isn't it? Like the chair he sat in. He's got some stuffing sort of coming out of the arms a little bit, and he sort of plugs his ears with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think probably won't work.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I was kind of... I don't think that would quite work, but...
Stuff it in and they go ding and you go, oh, fuck.
But, I mean, that's running when you do find a perfect sort of hole for your person to your main character. They really can't get out of it. Like, you have to sort of fumble it a bit to get them to succeed. So, like, I did kind of feel like this film might be one of those films that ends with the bad guys winning. But then I'm really glad it didn't. I'm really glad it had some of that sort of comeuppance stuff in the end. I think he's got like a pool ball or something against the wrestling boy's head or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So he uses something, so the son comes to collect him for the surgery. Obviously, he attacks and kills him. And I mean, he pretty much just kills the rest of the family pretty quickly. He goes into the sort of like surgery as well and kills. How does he kill them? Has he got a gun?
Well, no, the dad, he gets the ram head, the deer head.
Gores
him.
Again with the deer symbolism, with the sort of deer head. Yeah. And there was a bit in the trailer where you see like a sort of skeleton of
and I really like that. And I'm kind of sad it wasn't in the film.
It's not in the film, no. Yeah. It should have been cool to see what happened. It could have just been a dream sequence or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Catherine Keener, Missy, I'm not too sure how he kills her. I know she tries to get
the cup.
Maybe he just hits her with the cup.
I can't remember exactly what he does, but I'm pretty sure he bludgeons her. So he kills the son, kills the dad, and then bludgeons her. And then, that's a killing spree there.
Yeah. And then the daughter, I can't remember what happens. But
I think initially he just drives away.
And then the grandparents. The grandparents run after him, don't they? So like
So what this is where we didn't even notice the grandparents at this point. So the gardener and the maid are the grandparents of this family who have obviously gone through the same process and are essentially immortal. Well, they're in a new body.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously they come after him. But he knocks Georgina, who is the maid, over with his car.
Yeah. And then he feels like he has to get out to help her because he doesn't want to repeat past mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah, so he didn't. So obviously, foreshadowing with the deer as well that was killed, he sort of like, well, I've got to help her now.
Yeah.
So he drives with her, but then she goes apeshit on his ass while he's trying to drive and makes him crash the car.
Yeah, and then so then the grandparents are going to kill him, basically. I think he gets the camera out, flashes him a couple of times, so their original people come out and they kill themselves, basically.
Yeah. The daughter's here she got a rifle as well.
Yeah.
But she's sort of like trying to shoot. She's come into the fray as well. So, I mean, even at this point where he's got out of the house, the odds seem massively stacked against him because he's got the grandparents going at him and Rose with a rifle as well.
Yeah. And then he gets on top of her somehow. He starts strangling her.
Yeah.
And then the police arrive. And then it turns out to be Rod. Just like a perfect ending to the film.
Yeah. Well, because you think the police arrive and there's a moment where obviously he's over Rose strangling her. There are bodies sort of everywhere, bodies of the grandparents.
Yeah.
And you assume that the police are here. And I thought this was how it was going to end.
Yeah.
I thought the film was going to end with it being the same police officer from earlier who had stopped them seeing this happen. And obviously, clearly he's got some issues as it is, this police officer. And I thought he was just going to shoot Chris. Completely misread the scenario, as I guess you would. And then shoot Chris, but it wasn't. It was Rod, and it was like I was so like. Oh, thank God.
I wonder if that was an alternative ending, like.
Yeah, it could be.
But then it would kind of nullify Rod's importance in the film completely.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it did end really well. So it was a pretty solid film, like story, like in most ways. I think there's a couple of things like the cotton wool in the ears. I'd have been out really work, but I think it was a really, like, say this is his first feature film I think he wrote, potentially. It was, like, really well done. Like, so Tommy Draper sent us a link to the article, like, the symbolism in the film. And I thought you'd talk about five of them and just see what you think, if they were actually intentional or if you think it was just sort of a coincidence. So the first one is the silver spoon that Catherine Keener uses to hypnotize and to put the black people under the spell. Silver spoon is, like, a symbol for... like white wealth. which I thought, yeah, maybe. I mean, that could just been accident.
Yeah, there's like, I bet there's bound to be loads of symbolism like that in the film. Stuff that we probably, well, I guess you're going to tell me some more.
Yeah, the other one was when a camera flashes, it helps people literally see the light. I feel like that's kind of reaching a little bit, but
it's pretty interesting. Yeah, well, it does, I guess, in terms of the story.
Yeah, but they said that the deer is meant to be a symbol of his mother. I didn't get this the first time I saw it. I just thought it was a bit of a random deer. But now I kind of understand that because of the way she died, that sort of makes sense. This is an interesting one that I didn't see at all. Rose eats her cereal. She has like coloured cereal. She eats it completely separately from the white milk. So she has it in like two separate bowls. So even there, she has to separate her.
And was that like at the start or was that?
I think it was at the start when he was doing something. I think he was like getting ready or packing his clothes or something and she was eating cereal. I'll have to watch it again, but I thought that was quite interesting. And also, the thing in the ears, the cotton in the ears, it says that their theory is that it's cotton that saves the day because, the representation of the slaves. And, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah, well, if these were all things done on purpose, then definitely that was...
Some of these things, I kind of feel like they're easy to piece together in retrospect. I don't know if Jordan Peele would have gone... I want to make cotton the hero of the day, or do you know what I mean?
Obviously it's a social commentary, and obviously it's a commentary on like race and commentary on like class as such as well a little bit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I think it is a very well rounded sort of like social thriller.
Yeah.
And I think if you look into too many of these sort of things, I mean it's gonna sort of like level it up a little bit too much in terms of what I think it's trying to do. Obviously it's trying to be poignant. Obviously it's trying to commentate on a lot of different things to do with race, things that are common now, things that were common years ago, struggles that certain characters clearly have gone through their whole lives. And I think it does that really well.
Yeah.
And I don't think it necessarily needs all those tiny little nuances in order to hammer the point home for me.
Yeah. And no, I think that's some point at most points, there's people reading like tea leaves, trying to put connections together that may not necessarily be there. Though they are interesting if they were there put like intentionally. Yeah. So in terms of like jump scares, there wasn't really many jump scares that I remember. I remember a couple of like scenes of people walking across hallways and stuff, and there's a man running towards him.
Yeah.
But I just love the dread. For me, it was like that build up of like the whole Stepford Wives dread. There's something not right here. They just sort of run throughout the film. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, definitely. That was the thing. It was kind of like, what's going to happen? What are these characters capable of? Is the protagonist going to make it out alive? All this stuff that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. So, are you ready for the trivia?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, number one, the film was filmed in 29 days.
Yeah, true.
False, it was 28 days they filmed it.
Why would you hit me with a cheap, why would you hit me with a cheap one like that? First one out the door.
We'll give you that one. Why not? So Jordan Peele was inspired to write his movie by Eddie Murphy. During a stand-up comedy show, Murphy talked about going to meet a Caucasian girlfriend's parents.
Yeah, true. Why not?
Apparently it's true. Number three, there is a quiet underlying crying of a black man under the whining of the deer. So you know when you hear the deer whining, there's like a black man crying underneath it.
I hope for your sake, Luke, that's true.
No, it's false. It's just some bullshit I made up. Okay.
you sounded a black man crying somewhere and you went, this is gonna be good for the trivia.
Yeah. When Chris is yelling for the keys from Rose, he inadvertently calls her real name, Al, but like Alison, that's the actress's name rather than the character's name.
True.
Apparently so. I have no idea if it's true or not, but apparently it is. Okay, so final one. You're doing very well today. Keegan-Michael Key, the other half of Keen Peele, wanted a part in the film, but Jordan Peele said, "Man, I don't trust black actors. They lazy as shit."
Yeah, that's probably true. Did he say that?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, man.
I don't think he'd say anything crass like that.
Yeah, maybe he would. You know, that's
maybe. Shit. I'm pretty sure they would have said something like that behind the scenes.
Yeah.
They should make a sketch of that, of him wanting to part in the film.
I mean, that seemed like the kind of thing those guys would come up with. But
yeah.
Have you seen Keanu, by the way?
No, I've never seen it. The cat.
I've not seen it yet either, but I do need to.
I've only seen a few of the sketches on YouTube. There's one I'm just like howling at. The guy who plays Key, like, I've seen him a few things, and he's always like so funny. Is the one where? Go on.
Is it the texting sketch?
Oh, no, I've not seen that. No.
Oh, you have to find that. So it's basically like all about how. Out like no context and come across in a text. So one guy's like being really cool about like texting someone saying, "Yeah, whatever, man. I don't care if we go out or do whatever." And the other guy's taking it completely the wrong way, going, "This guy, whatever." You gotta watch it. I'll link you to that because it is it's hilarious. And then obviously the school teacher one.
That's what I was thinking of. Just the way he gets increasingly angry.
Jay Quellen. Aaron.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Amazing. I've not seen the whole sketch. I've seen like a few episodes here and there, but it's great.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously Jordan Peele, his stock has gone up massively since this. He was linked to Akira for a while, but apparently turned it down.
I would turn it down if they asked me. They would never ask me, but I would. Mainly because I haven't seen Akira, which I think could be like a stumbling block in the whole thing.
They ask you then. Luke Condor, have you seen Akira? No.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're hired. That's the trio I have to do. But I think he said he's going to make some more sort of like social thrillers and sort of stuff in this vein.
That's so cool.
I think I read somewhere maybe he's been signed up for some sort of series.
Yeah.
Possibly writing it. I don't know if he's directing it.
Well, this is produced by Jordan. Oh, is his name Jordan Bloom? Bloomhouse Pictures. I think it's Jordan Bloom. They have a really cool model at the minute. So they did this with M. Night Shyamalan and
more people.
They give them small budgets to make low budget sort of films, but they give them complete creative control. So they come up with some really interesting films. And they seem to be working really well. Because I quite like Split. I quite liked this, obviously. Yeah. The last M. Night Shyamalan film wasn't as bad as people said, I didn't think. It's the one with the creepy grandparents.
Oh, I absolutely hated that.
Did you know? The bit that kind of stuck with me was the woman. The old woman under the house in a crawl space, like running around like a dog animal thing.
Yeah, I just didn't like it. I think I hated it because all of the actors annoyed me.
And all of the actors, kids.
All of them, and I felt like none of them could. But anyway, we should discuss that whole different. If we've got opposing views on that, we should discuss that whole other time.
Yeah.
Is the Unbreakable sequel going to be same studio as well, or is that going to be a big one?
I don't know. I can't imagine it might go for a big one now.
Because he's written it, hasn't he? He's written the script, apparently. It's called... Oh, what's it called? Glass. It's called Glass.
Oh, yeah, it's about Mr. Glass, yeah.
Well, it's going to be all three of them, isn't it? So we've got Mr. Glass, spoilers for Split, obviously, but character from Split, and Bruce Willis as Man in a Mac.
As Unbreakable. I remember...
as Unbreakable Man.
I remember watching... that film and being super inspired to like draw him as a sort of a superhero sort of character.
Yeah,
it's cool. It's like the first superhero film I watched. I was like, this is a great superhero film.
Yeah.
Okay, you need to grade this film, by the way.
Yes.
Is there what kind of thing would you go for Get Out?
I'd probably give it like a B+. I reckon.
Yeah.
I think it's incredibly unique. The thing, you know, it's super tense. I think it's great as sort of like social commentary, great as sort of like all the actors are awesome in it. I definitely want to see it again. I've only seen it once, but I definitely want to see it again. And I think the unique element was the thing that I enjoyed the most. Like it was a very, it's difficult to compare it to too much because you know what is out there sort of like this. We've all seen sort of thrillers which sort of approach these sort of subjects, but not in sort of like a horror way.
Yeah.
Horror way.
Yeah.
So B+.
Okay, I'm gonna give it an A-, which is pretty high. And higher than I thought I was gonna give it. Like, I think it's a really, really solid film, and I think we don't get that very often anymore. Like there's not many films nowadays that come out and I watch and I think I would quite happily watch that 2 or 3 more times.
Yeah.
Like it's just a really good film. Like I don't think it was perfect, so I probably would have given it an A+ if it was. Maybe the ending was a bit more violent, or had a bit more of a catharsis to it. But I still think it was just solid. It's just a really good film. It's just a great film. But yeah, so I'm going to settle on...
Sounds good to me, man.
B plus A minus. That's pretty good. Nice one, Jordan. You nailed it. You nailed it, dude. Okay, cool. So the next episode, I think we're going to be either doing another honorable mention, either doing the Alien Covenant film, or we should probably crack on with the list. And the next one is another oldie. I do think the oldies are more difficult because they take more concentration. They take more thinking about. They're not like, you can't just sit down and watch them.
Don't look at your phone. Don't look at your phone.
That's a struggle. Because like in like today's films, like you don't have time to look at your phone because the shot's going to change. The scene's going to like move. The pace is that quick. In the olden days, they give you 15 seconds per shot. So you've like, you watch the shot for 5 seconds. You understand, I've got 10 seconds of phone looking time now. And then you put it away. So when
that's
the
like two thirds of the film. You're looking at your phone.
And the film's not even that long. Yeah.
The film's like 46 seconds long.
Yeah.
So yeah, Dracula 1931, possibly. Or if we've both seen, well, I know I have, but if we've both seen Alien Covenant by the time
this
next week rolls around, we'll do that. Only because we want to stay current, you know? We want to stay relevant in tough times of horror podcasts. We want to know that we got a finger on the pulse of horror.
Yeah.
Finger on the pulse of horror.
So just got a message from Gary Hackett, who's also in the group. He said he just watched it. It wasn't what he was expecting, or he wasn't sure what he was expecting. Definitely up there with the best of the best cult thrillers, he'd say. Top movie, 10 out of 10. So he's another guy who super enjoyed it.
For a straight 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10, yeah.
I don't know if I can. I can't go smashing out 10 out of 10s willy-nilly, you know?
No.
I get regret. I go,
where do you think that expression comes from, willy-nilly?
Willy-nilly. There was a man called Willy.
He had a nilly.
He had a nilly and a willy. I don't know. Let's do it on another episode, the history of that.
Wouldn't it be the other way around? Like, wouldn't you have a nilly willy? Like,
what does nilly mean? Cold?
Well, could be. Could mean that. It could mean chilly. Yeah. Nilly willy, yeah.
Willy nilly.
You know when it's so cold that things shrink?
No, that's what are you on about?
That's
what are you on about?
That's a nilly willy. Okay, cool. So this show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com and grab a free book. Become a patron over at patreon.com/Hawk and Cleaver. Thanks to Kovac Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give us a 5-star rating, review in iTunes. We don't have many yet, so do that. Go to Facebook, search for Horror Hangout and join the group. We talk about random horror stuff. It's quite cool. Thanks to my co-host, Ben, for being a real horror dude.
Thanks, Luke.
And thanks to me. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you twice.
Cool. Bye, then. Talk to you in a bit.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.